Artificial intelligence, AI, has the potential to revolutionize the way we work and enhance employees' lives. However, it's important to acknowledge that the integration of AI also presents its fair share of obstacles, particularly for fast-growing companies. As we navigate this transformative era, it's natural to question whether AI will truly make companies more efficient. What potential opportunities and challenges does AI present? How can fast-growing companies effectively leverage AI to create value for their clients and stakeholders? In this episode of the Privately Speaking podcast series, host and KPMG private enterprise partner Erica Whitmore sits down with Steve Hsu, co-founder of Superfocus.ai, to discuss further.
Well, I'm really excited about today's podcast. I think we're going to dive a little bit deeper on AI and what that can mean to our audience. So I'm very excited to have Steve Hsu here with us today with Superfocus.ai. And Steve, if it's okay with you, I'll let you introduce yourself.
Sure. I'm a founder of Superfocus.ai, which is a tech company that builds AIs for enterprise. So those are AIs which use large language models. However, they are embedded in a software architecture that makes them reliable. They do not hallucinate. A little bit more about me. I'm also a professor of theoretical physics and computational science at Michigan State University, and I'm a multiple deep tech founder. I've founded or co-founded, I think, four or five different tech companies.
Wow, Steve. So I feel like your kickoff is that's like the missing link with AI. I mean, so now we're going to jump right in, right? But tell me more about that, because I think that's one of the hugest, if not the biggest issue with AI, right, is the hallucinations.
Yes. So just to give you a little historical background, one of my other startups, which was founded back in 2017, had as early investors some of the founders of OpenAI. So I have known those guys for a long time and have been following the progression of GPT since all the way back to GPT-1. And so I knew in advance that AI based on that architecture would have what's called a hallucination problem. And what happens is that because they train it on trillions of words of data, mostly scraped from the internet, it is good at responding in a plausible way. It understands human language, and it will respond the way it has seen the data respond to similar prompts in its training. But it won't necessarily know facts, specific facts. So if you want your AI, let's suppose your AI is handling some task for you and you're a travel agency or an airline, and someone says, I'd like a flight that lands direct flight, which lands in Paris before 6 p.m. What are my options? The model is perfectly happy to give you a response which is consistent with all the data it has seen, and it's seen many flight itineraries. However, it won't necessarily know whether that United flight to Paris is real or it only flew 5 years ago, or you know, it was just a made-up itinerary. And it'll just give you an answer. And it's perfectly happy to give an answer that's plausible, but it may not be the true factual answer. And that problem is now widely recognized as hallucination. So we knew this was coming well before ChatGPT was launched. In fact, our company was founded before ChatGPT was launched. We knew this was coming. We knew GPT was getting really, this technology was getting really good. But we knew it had this hallucination problem, and being experienced in enterprise software and startups, we knew that there was no way this kind of stuff was going to be deployed in the enterprise unless it was made more reliable. And so we developed a bunch of techniques that could constrain the AI. In fact, the way that we describe it is we attach a memory to the large language model, and the facts that are in the memory, the facts, the policies, the procedures that are in the memory are specified by our clients. So our clients can take the training data they use to train a human agent, travel agent, or customer support agent. That same training information that they use for humans, we can embed as the memory of our AI. And then our AI will only answer questions using that information.
That is fascinating. And I looked, and it does look like you work with several different industries. Is that correct?
Yes, the startup that I mentioned, which some OpenAI founders are investors in, is called Genomic Prediction. And that startup is the first to be able to genotype embryos that are produced in vitro fertilization, IVF. And we use the genetic data from those embryos to be able to predict disease risks and health risks to the eventual children that are born. And so that's a very different industry. However, it is also an application of AI.
So the example that you gave with training the travel agents makes perfect sense to me. In genomic prediction, how does that work? Because where I'm having trouble like connecting the dots, right, is the hallucinations. So the accuracy, I'm an auditor by trade, right? So accuracy is super important. That makes sense in, you know, like a typical business, but in like a high growth startup like that, how does that work?
You know, if you have a web page, and all companies have web pages, and you have an FAQ or something on your web page, rather than have a static FAQ, which nobody ever reads, it's very easy now to build an AI that can answer any question, which is related to the FAQ information. And in such a way that, you know, humans can ask the same question, same semantic content in the question in many, many different ways. The old style brittle, what we used to call flowbot AIs or chatbots, can only answer the question if it's phrased in the proper way. Otherwise, it doesn't really understand what you're saying. Whereas the new language models, you can say it in any number of ways and it will understand what you're saying. And then it'll properly answer the question. So it's another way of communicating with customers or doing after sale support of your customers in a much more powerful, effective way. So anybody who has that kind of problem, or even has, say, an HR problem or something like that, where your own employees are always asking questions about how many days of leave do I have left, or do I get parental leave if this happens, et cetera, et cetera. Those are simple queries that can be answered now by the AI, but in a reliable way. So according to your actual company policies, rather than some thing that it saw on the internet. So I think almost any company that has tasks like this that are currently handled by humans, they could instead be handled by AIs in the future.
That makes a lot of sense. So maybe if switching gears just a little bit, so you've kind of shared the difference, right, between, you know, the kind of the open AI or the AI that produces at the end of the day hallucinations, right, or inaccurate information because of, you know, the way that it gathers information, and then the difference in terms of kind of what your company does. What do you think is like possible with AI and like in the timeline, right? Like you if you listen to a lot of different newscasts and things, you know, obviously AI, a lot of companies are investing a lot of money in it, but it's, you know, who's going to be able to capitalize off of that? Is it really going to make their companies more efficient, et cetera? Those are some of the questions investors have, right? So can you talk a little bit about just the, you know, what's possible, and then also just from your perspective, timeline?
Yeah, this is the question that's on everyone's mind. Every CEO, every board member, every investor wants to know. And of course, it's difficult to predict. Let me first say something which is not speculative at all, which is that if you take the current state-of-the-art language models like GPT-4 or some of the other ones that have been built by Google or by Facebook or by Meta or by Anthropic, for example, or Mistral, these leading-edge foundation models already understand human language very, very well. And so when you couple them to, in our case, an attached memory or some attached set of goal or planning capability, so that's another set of things you could attach to the LLM, you can get something that, even though like a computer scientist or philosopher might not call it AGI, artificial general intelligence, it will seem to the average person as if it is. So in other words, you will definitely be able to have an assistant on your phone which has looked at your emails and your calendar and can answer questions and even take some simple actions on your behalf. I think that will definitely happen. There are many, many companies working on that kind of technology right now, and it'll become a reality within a few years, I think. Many, many human tasks are automatable, like starting with customer support. So we gave a bunch of examples like that. But, you know, travel agents, a lot of what the travel agent does is automatable. Now, I wouldn't go so far as to say accounting could be automatable or financial analysis. I think that's currently out of reach. So currently, there are no fully reliable AI systems that can then fully replace, say, a consultant at McKinsey or a financial analyst at Goldman. But, it, you know, I think
a heck of a good start, though, Steve, at least that's from my experience.
Yeah. So you can definitely, for example, assist a human that's performing those tasks and make that human, say, 50% more efficient. I think that's for sure possible. Another area I might mention, which I think is highly automatable, is if you have ever done telemedicine where you call, you have a, like, say your child is sick and you call in and you're talking to, say, a nurse practitioner on the phone, or you might even be talking to a general practitioner on the phone. A lot of what's done, at least in terms of telemedicine, is automatable. It's actually pretty similar to customer support in the sense that you can have embedded in the memory of your AI a list, a sort of checklist of things and procedures that the doctors and nurses go through, and you know, they then suggest, oh, just wait a day. If it doesn't get worse, call me. You know, you're fine, but otherwise, call me back. You know, things like that. Arriving at that kind of conclusion, the AIs are actually going to be perfectly fine, as good as humans at doing that kind of thing.
That makes a lot of sense. Yeah, it's interesting because I was flying from Salt Lake City to Denver last night. My flight was significantly delayed, and I am almost certain whoever helped me change my flight was not human. and there, it wasn't that the task didn't get accomplished. It was that you could just kind of tell in the tone of the, amazingly, I did it all over text. Anyways, as you were talking about travel agents and things like that, I'm pretty sure that's how that change in flight got accomplished. But hopefully that it was a little rocky, but it got done. So my guess is in a couple of years it'll be even smoother, and I probably won't realize it's not a human.
Yeah, being an insider in this industry, I will tell you, the thing you dealt with, and this is especially likely to me given that it was over text, could have been AI, but it wouldn't have incorporated the modern power of large language models. That was probably a rather relatively brittle system, which is designed so that if you have a mass cancellation, that it then allows quick rebooking by the people that were on the canceled flight. That kind of thing is more, a little more like structured if then kind of statements than a full-blown LLM AI, which the LLM AI could have sort of chatted with you and you could have said something like, well, it's actually better for me to stay an extra day here in Salt Lake City because, you know, I don't have to work tomorrow and I can blah, blah, blah. And the model then would know, like, oh, it can say, you know, it might just come back with, okay, how about if I schedule for another flight tomorrow then? And the more brittle system today wouldn't be able to do that, but we build systems that can do what I just described.
Okay, so I love that, Steve, because that's a tangible example, right? So do you have another example like that of here's how things kind of are today, and yes, they use some type of AI, but this is what I envision in the future in another, like, you know, either a service industry or something that would impact, you know, quite a few people?
Yeah, so I'll give you an example. So we work with a very big consumer electronics manufacturer that makes smart TVs. And we've built an AI that can troubleshoot problems people have with a TV across hundreds of models that they've sold over the last 20 years or so. The actual knowledge base that their human agents have to use or navigate to troubleshoot all these problems. These problems could be things like, you know, it's saying it's not connecting to Wi-Fi, or my Netflix app keeps crashing, or there's, you know, weird static on the screen. There's so many different problems that you can have with your TV, and then you might call them to get assistance. We now have an AI that can troubleshoot all of those problems and is much better than even the 90th percentile human agent that's working for them. So, and by the way, I didn't mention this. The other problem that we've solved at the startup is how to do all this inference with the language model and non-hallucination and the memory and stuff. How to do all of that inference in under 2 to 3 seconds, so that if you're using the voice mode and you're talking to the AI, you want when you finish what you have to say, you want there to be less than a 2 or 3 second gap before the AI starts talking back to you. Otherwise, it sounds weird. And we've now been able to do that. We've now compressed everything. We've sped everything up to the point where you can have a kind of natural conversation with AI. And so with this consumer products company, we've more or less demonstrated to them now that the AI is superior to their average call center worker. And so that all of those jobs, you know, there are 90% of those jobs can be more or less automated now.
So, which makes sense, right? Because at least the research that I've done, and again, just kind of what's out there, call centers is obviously a clear target. What do you think are the other kind of bigger areas of, you know, human work that'll be impacted? And like, I don't know, at least from my perspective, you know, this has happened over decades and hundreds of years, right? Where things evolve and we always figure it out, right? I don't think it's a bad thing. It's the next evolution, right?
Absolutely. To give you an example, there's a big shortage of doctors and nurses. And in the developing world, there are countries where, you know, the number of doctors or nurses per 1,000 people in the population is 10 times or even 100 times lower than, say, in the United States. And so to have an AI that, you know, nevertheless, even in these developing countries, now a majority of people or a pretty good fraction of people have either a phone or a smartphone. For them to be able to call an AI and with a medical issue, like, oh, my father has blood in his stool, what should I do? And then the AI starts having a conversation with them. And then 20 minutes later, the AI either says, wait 24 hours and see if it goes away. If not, you might consider traveling to, you know, this clinic, but the nearest clinic might be, you know, like 6 hours travel away for these people. So there are enormous benefits that are going to come from building AIs that are able to do the things we've already discussed today.
Yeah, absolutely. So I think the last question that I've got is kind of, it's another big and broad one, Steve. So hopefully that works. Just your views on being a startup in the current environment, you know, there's kind of a lot going on, right? The economy seems to be doing well, but there's pockets, right, that are maybe struggling and doing some layoffs. What is your view on being a startup in today's environment?
So our perspective as an AI startup is very different from other companies because we're in the quote hot space. It's very unusual because so many CEOs of even public companies and directors of public companies are trying to seek answers to the exact questions that you asked me in the course of this interview so that we are able to get meetings as one of the companies that's actually innovating technologically in the space. It's easy for us to get meetings with really top level people at these companies because they themselves want to figure out what is going on. So we're in a unique situation. We're somewhat insulated from what's happening in the general economy because every company has a budget to deploy or at least investigate AI if they think it can really return value to the company. That's protected. They might be laying people off, but at the same time, they're trying to figure out how to use AI for higher efficiencies. And also, like of all the areas, sectors that venture capital is flowing into, AI is definitely the hottest area. So we're not really affected by what's happening in the general economy, at least at Superfocus. In some of the other companies that I've founded, you know, you might feel it. We might be more sensitive to what's happening in the general economy. I think one thing I would just say to all Americans, just you know, broadening out the discussion a little bit, is whether you feel the economy is doing well or it's struggling along, this may depend on where you are, whether you're a working class person or a professional, et cetera. Regardless of how you feel about it, the economy itself, you should be reminded that this country's borrowing $1.5 trillion every year. And our kids have to pay for that money. So the Fed, if you want to think of it this way, is literally printing money for the level of prosperity that we currently have, whether you think that's good or bad, whether you think the current level of economic health is good or bad, just know that we're borrowing unprecedented amounts of money from the future, from our kids, that they have to pay off. We're borrowing that money to get what we're getting right now. And that's something that being an older, you know, not I'm not a young kid anymore, I remember times when there were huge debates in Congress over whether we should run these deficits, deficits which were much smaller than what we currently run. So whatever we have, we're paying for it in a kind of underhanded way by borrowing from the future. And I think every American should think about that.
No, that makes sense. That makes a lot of sense. Coming back to, you know, all the meetings that you're having with these different CEOs, regardless of the size of company, and, you know, companies having budget for AI, what are some of the aha moments that some of these high level leaders have had in your meetings in terms of, oh, I can see how we can gain efficiencies there, or I can see how, you know, I can make my employees' lives better. You know what I mean? What are some of the aha moments that they've had in those meetings?
Yeah, so great question. So number one, if you're following AI and you're interested in, you know, what is really happening, if you listen to public earnings calls with, you know, big company CEOs, those quarterly earnings calls, you'll often have, so for example, recently you had the CEO of Salesforce.com, which is a pretty big, well-known company. You know, someone asked him like, oh, all these AI initiatives you guys are rolling out, because like on the PR side, you'll see Salesforce saying like, oh, we rolled out this AI called Einstein and it's going to be great. You know, people using Salesforce will be able to get help from Einstein all the time or whatever. But then on the earnings call where the CEO, you know, he's legally liable for anything he says on that earnings call, right? People, some investor will dial in and say, well, what do you anticipate as revenues in the coming quarter from AI initiatives? And then you'll see the CEO back off and he'll say something like, well, there's great potential here, but as far as the next quarter or two, it's de minimis. We don't expect any material impact on our bottom line from this AI stuff, right? So you'll actually see like a gap between the PR stuff, the media, you know, the pitching of, you know, new super AI capabilities, and what the CEO honest, when he's forced to be honest, actually says about the revenue impact of what they're doing. And we would say from the super focused perspective, this is because they know internally the AIs that a lot of times they'll just grab some LLM from OpenAI or some other company and just try to like throw it in there. Maybe they'll train it, fine tune it on some of their, you know, use cases and things like this. But generally, it won't really be fully reliable. And they know that. And they're very worried about that. There is a huge gap between practical utility of these AIs and what is actually possible unless you deploy a technology like ours and what most companies have. So that's the state of play right now. But then when you go into a meeting and you can actually show them that you've built an AI that is reliable, that doesn't hallucinate, and it knows literally everything in the HR manual, for example, at company X, then they have an aha moment where they realize, well, this is how powerful this stuff is really going to be at the end.
Yeah, absolutely. No, I think that's pretty common, right? That there's a lot of companies doing a lot of things, but in terms of how it's going to impact the bottom line is yet to be determined. And if it does feel like a lot of companies are going in a lot of different directions because there's a lot of good things happening, and then to your earlier point, there's maybe some not bad things happening, but maybe not as robust, right, as the users are hoping. And I would say even in, you know, at KPMG, we've got AI embedded for all of our practices. So advisory, tax, and audit. And it's really interesting to see how it evolves, you know, literally over a month, right? So it does get better and better, but you still have the caveat, right? You signed a waiver that says, I understand, right, that I'm responsible for everything that comes out of here because I need to make sure it's right. Right.
So what you just said is exactly how I would describe the situation. So management, you know, upper management is trying to roll out AI tools to make each and every KPMG person more effective and efficient. However, it's still the case that a human really has to review everything that comes out of the AI. It could save you time. Sometimes maybe it costs you time because you have to like track down some really subtle error that the AI made. But that's sort of the state of play. There are very limited set of situations where the AI is on its own making important decisions or supplying information that's not going to be further reviewed by another employee of the company. So when a customer support AI is talking to the end customer, there is no human in the middle there. And so that those are the use cases where, okay, the AI is fully doing this job. And those are very rare right now. There are very limited situations where that has materialized, but we're sure that is possible. It's just now that technology is getting rolled out.
Yeah. And in terms of kind of back to the timeline, you said earlier that, you know, in terms of like call centers and things like that, where maybe the tasks are a little bit less complicated, that'll be a reality either now or very soon, right? And then the rest of it will follow, you think, a few years after?
I think that it's unknown, you know, I mean, to fully replace a tax auditor with an AI, I think it's unknown how long that is going to take. You know, I wouldn't be surprised at all if it takes another 5 years or more for that, something like that to happen. But for these, quote, easier jobs, you know, less cognitively demanding, less complex set of inputs and outputs, it's already possible. It just hasn't been done at scale yet. It's just starting to be done at scale now.
So my other favorite question, this is a random one, Steve, that I ask anybody who's on to talk about AI is, when will we be ordering things from, you know, a fast food or maybe even a fast casual restaurant with no human? I mean, I know we can do that now, but where they're literally not a human, except maybe they're back cooking.
Yeah, we can do that now. It just has not been deployed at scale. So it is possible. So for example, if we got an engagement with McDonald's and they wanted an AI that lives on the McDonald's app on your phone and can you can just talk to it and get your order in with no human participation, we can definitely build that. Now, part of the issue with this particular scenario that you raised is that the GUI UIs are already really good. In other words, like, is it really better for me to be talking to an AI than to just navigate the app where I can just click like extra large fries, you know, milkshake, you know, I'm pretty good at navigating that GUI and just touching some buttons to get what I want. And is it actually better to talk to an AI? So like in some of these cases, like the interface engineering is already good enough that the gain from having the AI come along isn't necessarily that great. So, and I would say restaurant ordering is kind of like borderline in that case. Something like someone calling in to say, like, my TV, this is not working, and there's like a 10-step troubleshooting process that the agent has to walk you through to get your TV back working online. You know, for that, you're not going to do that through some GUI UI. You need the actual, either you need a human or you need an AI to do it.
And that is a very common problem. So that in and of itself will be revolutionary. Well, Steve, any parting thoughts for our listeners?
I think you've asked all the right questions. And I think we are in for an unprecedented pace of change. I think, you know, like usually what happens is you initially have like this super hyped stuff. And we've been through that in the last year and a half, super like overhyped expectations about AI. And now people are realizing like, okay, this is kind of more realistically where it is. It can help me, it can assist me, but it can't fully replace me at this point in time. But in the background, these busy beaver technologists have been continuing to push things forward. And you will start to see job categories where the human is fully eliminated in favor of an AI.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, Steve, I can't thank you enough for joining me today. I think this is going to be probably one of our more popular podcasts. So thank you so much for taking the time out of your day. And we hope you have a good one. And we'd love to have you back soon.
It's my pleasure. And for your listeners who obviously like podcasts, I'll just mention that I have a podcast called Manifold, M-A-N-I-F-O-L-D. If you Google my name, you'll find it right away, Manifold. And in that podcast, I interview AI researchers, technologists, business people, startup entrepreneurs. It probably would be something that your audience is interested in.
Absolutely. I am going to go listen to some myself. You just shared one earlier that I think is a family listener about Amazon. So awesome, Steve. Well, thank you so much. Have a great day and we will talk to you soon.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure.
Thanks, Steve.
Thank you for listening to KPMG's Privately Speaking podcast. And be sure to subscribe to this series to be notified of new episodes.